Hello and welcome to the first podcast for MOAS, the Migrant Offshore Aid Station. We were founded in 2014 to provide search and rescue assistance to refugees and migrants in distress at sea. We've saved over 30,000 people so far. This podcast wants to include you in what we do, to explore different angles of migration and help you to better understand the people we save. Every fortnight, we'll bring you updates on our mission, tell you about the technologies we use, interview experts to discuss wider forced migration issues, and most importantly, share with you the stories and experiences of the people we rescue. So to launch the podcast, we talked to Dr. Nando Sagona of MedMig, an international project shedding light on the stories of migrants and refugees crossing the Eastern and Central Mediterranean. They argue that we focus too closely on where migrants and refugees came from and where they land. Instead, we need to understand their journey in between and the experiences they face in transit countries like Libya. He began by telling us that migrants' experiences and the reasons for their journeys vary considerably.
We carried out 500 interviews, roughly half of them in Greece and the rest in Italy and to a smaller extent in Malta. What is clear is that the stories that we get are significantly different in terms of the experience of the journeys, the modalities. Clearly, also the country of origin, so the people they're crossing, varies significantly by route. The reason that we may sort of define as forced migration, so experience of violence, human rights violation, war, persecution, were by far the dominant stories that we heard. However, they were often also linked up to dreams about improving their life and better future. So the experience of forced migration doesn't mean that someone can also have aspiration for the future.
What would you describe are the sort of striking trends in this research?
What I would say that is the difference in terms of the durations and the trajectories of the journey. It's very clear that, for example, people reaching Greece through Turkey, they have a much shorter journeys from a smaller number of starting points. While the research highlighted that journeys through the Central Mediterranean route start much, much earlier and they take much longer. So what we found out is that the large majority of people reaching Greece will take about between 1 and 3 months to reach into Greece from their departure point. While this was not the case for people that reach Italy or Malta through Libya in particular, where the journeys are longer, they tend to last. The biggest group is between 3 to 18 months. But there is also people that have been migrating in the different countries from their country of origin for many, many years. So there is also the issues of remigration or secondary forced displacement for people that were seeking refuge in Libya or in Egypt and they were forced to leave from there because of the political instability, violence, racism, and threat to livelihood.
Can you describe what you mean by primary and secondary drivers of migration?
We wanted to stress that while people may, the primary reason for leaving their country of origin or their country of permanent residence may be linked to violation of human rights, persecution, war, etc., they may also have another set of reasons for trying to get to a destination. So, for example, if you are in refugees from Syria and some member of your family are living in Sweden, you may yes, you're refugees, but you also have other attachment and motivation for your journey, which may take you to Sweden rather than going to Lithuania. And this has been a big challenge in terms of understanding where people were going once they were getting into Europe. One of the findings of the research is that, for example, the very large majority of the refugees and migrants we interviewed in Greece, they didn't see Greece as a destination point. They just went through Greece as a transit, and some of them were stuck there, others they left very quickly. In the case of Italy, we found exactly the opposite. For a large number of people we interviewed, Italy was, at least for the time being, their final destination. They were not aiming to move out quickly.
One of the arguments of the research is that politicians and the media have been making assumptions about the migrant crisis. Can you explain this?
Our starting point, looking at the way that the responses to the migrant refugee crisis has unfolded, first of all, there has been a lot of panic among European policymakers, especially in the first couple of years. Then the situation got started to settle down since the introduction of the EU-Turkey deal, let's say. But the assumption were that, that was a very clear characterization. People reaching from Turkey into Greece were refugees, while people reaching from Libya into Italy and Malta were not genuine refugees, so they were illegal migrants, inverted commas, or economic migrants, and for this reason they were less deserving. The other assumption was that everyone in Africa wanted to move to Europe, which is not something that we found. In many cases, the people that we interviewed in Italy, they were basically trying to create a life in Libya, but then they realized that this was no longer possible. I mean, very often European policymakers forget that there is a lot of mobility and migration within Africa, and not everyone is trying to reach Europe.
One of the thrusts of the MedMig report is support for the formation of safe and legal routes. Do you think we're any further in achieving this?
There has been a few attempts. Clearly, for example, the humanitarian corridors experience that a number of organizations in Italy have tried to put in place are a good example of successful attempt to create safe routes. What we have learned in the last 3 years is that clearly doesn't seem to be a political will for a large-scale opening up of safe routes. What the safe routes will enable is to ensure that the journeys are less dangerous, that the business of the smugglers is reduced because there will be less need for their services. Would it reduce the number of people that wanted to reach into Europe? No, because obviously the change of the means of transport doesn't mean that's changed the reason why people wanted to migrate. So as long as there is a civil war in Syria, for example, or political instability, threat to livelihood all over in the number of African states, that will continue to be a need for trying to look for a better, safer place.
With the EU-Turkey deal in place, what do you make of the recent developments in the European agenda on migration and the recent EU-Libya deal? Do you see them working? Is this the right way forward?
The question is, are they working according to what goal the European leader wanted to achieve? Probably yes, in terms of the Turkey-EU deal, in the sense that clearly since the implementation in March 2016, the number of people that crossed through Turkey into Greece has reduced significantly, almost back to a pre-crisis levels. So in that sense, they managed to really to curb the flow. How sustainable is the solution then is actually a different set of issues. And it really links up with a broader issue that is the geopolitical dimension of the crisis. In the sense, Turkey, through the implementation of this the deal, has really gained a lot of leverage vis-à-vis the European Union. And is also basically able to open and close the tap in terms of allow people to move in and out of Turkey. The sustainability in the longer term, the medium term of the deal is, it's not as secure as some people may imagine. The other point we asked was around, can this be replicated elsewhere, like in Libya or with the African states? Clearly, the European agenda is moving in that direction. The debate around the migration compact and now they call the partnership agreements with African states, after especially the Valletta summit, are moving in that direction. And there has been, since the last 12 months, clearly a sustained attempt to stabilize Libya and the UN-backed government of Libya. So this has been very much linked to providing resources and training to the coastal guard. So the stabilization of Libya has gone hand in hand with an attempt to get Libya to do the job that Gaddafi government used to do before, in the sense of controlling the flows reaching into Europe. But the situation is still politically unstable, so we don't know how sustainable is this. What is likely to happen is in the medium term, if Libya become less accessible, two things may happen. One is that people are going to take more dangerous route. That basically means that they won't live anymore from fairly safe departure point, but they will live from more rocky and dangerous coastlines areas, which may increase the number of people that die. They may start to travel more at night so that they can be less easy to identify. Or other routes may open in other places. I mean, we saw in 2016 some attempt, for example, people departing from Egypt, but that is, I think, is far more difficult, basically as a journey, because it's a much longer distance. It will take a different kind of infrastructure. But, for example, what we may say is increased pressure on Morocco or on the Canary Island, for example, as a result of the fact that the Libyan route is no longer available.
That was Dr. Nando Sagona telling us about the experiences and journeys of migrants crossing the central and eastern Mediterranean. You can find a link to the full MedMig report on the podcast pages below. Join us in a fortnight, where we will be bringing you more from MOAS, and discussing how conscription in countries like Syria is forcing young people to leave. Until then, you can follow us on our social media and check out our latest updates on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and now Audioboom. Or support our rescue missions by giving whatever you can to help us save lives at sea. From all of us here at MOAS, goodbye.